Today on Movie Wall, as we record part 3 of our Tribeca Film Festival extravaganza. It's time for Movie Wallace. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie Wallace is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane if you love the movies the show is for you. And actually, we are your daily dose at the moment because we're trying to put out at least one podcast a day during our time over here at the Tribeca Film Festival, which has been fabulous so far.
Yes, we've been doing well, haven't we?
I have rectangle-shaped eyes now.
That's why we come to film festivals, yeah, though, right?
True.
You gorge yourself on movies, absolutely, until you're
if
sick of them.
If gorging is an analogy, then I am about to burst.
But we're not sick of them, right? I mean, this is the issue about being a movie fan.
I wouldn't say sick of them. I would just say a little fatigued.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Call yourself a movie walla.
I think the lack of sleep is what's caught up with me as opposed to the watching the movies.
Yeah, it's been pretty intense.
See, my experience with film festivals is you watch about 3 or 4 movies in a day.
Yeah.
But then as long as you have like a half hour, 1 hour in between movies to kind of
correct,
go get a coffee, you know, unload your mind, write up your notes, whatever, that's fine. But I think partly because of the schedule, we've been some mornings we've been just running from one theater to the other, which is what happens at most film festivals.
Yeah.
But then it gets to be quite a toll on your
correct
head.
Yeah.
We did resolve the eating situation though. We managed to have a decent meal
at, yes,
oh gosh, what was the name of the place?
Le District.
Yeah, okay, we can't remember that. But not, we keep thinking it's bourgeois, but it's not bourgeois. Beaubourg,
yes. Beaubourg French restaurant.
Recommendation from our dear friend Jeannie.
Indeed, yes, it was. And actually, we met a couple of our friends and fellow Movie Walla fans, Sandy and Thomas. So, hey, guys, if you're listening,
thank
really
you
great
for
to
coming
see
to
you.
Meet
yeah
us, yeah.
But it was, we had some. We had some food other than nasty hot dogs and the other nonsense food that we've been surviving on here at the film festival.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's start talking about the films that we saw on formal day 3 of Tribeca. And when I say day 3, I mean our day 3. We are fairly late in the film festival. I think things are sort of tapering down here, but that doesn't mean that there isn't quality material. We've seen plenty of great movies, and the first of those was Good Kill.
Okay, so in Good Kill, Major Tommy Egan, who's played by Ethan Hawke, is fighting a war from the safety of a Nevada trailer, but commitment to the mission comes at a price. So this is actually directed by Gattaca director Andrew Niccol, and I guess he's reuniting with Hawke for this timely drama about human costs of war technology, and it stars January Jones as well. So, Yazdi, what did you think of this one?
So I'm a big fan of Andrew Niccol. He really, you know, he started everything off for me with Gattaca, which is, I love that film so much. And since then, he's been kind of dabbling in the sci-fi genre. I think of this movie as his kind of commentary on the state of the world right now, in the state of contemporary world with surveillance, with the fight against terror. And he has a lot of things to say. And I think this is the movie where he gets it all off of his chest. So I think it's not an entertainer per se, I think, the movie, but I think it has really some amazing things to say about how we live. And it's remarkably balanced, I would say. It's very hard when you get into some of these issues that he's going at. And I'm glad that he kind of caught the whole issue with drones is a big deal for everyone right now. And he's come ahead of the game and quickly made his movie about how things will be once we start involving drones even more than we do right now. So anyway, this movie has a lot to say.
Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to start with, I was a little disappointed in that. I thought this was going to be another one of those movies which talks about the incompatibility of military and civilian life. You know, we've seen this theme revisited quite a lot lately. And actually ended up being, you know, just a little bit more on that. I think, Yazdi, I fully agree. It's a great commentary and some very observational stuff that I hadn't really given much thought to in terms of drone warfare, its impact on humanity, its impact on on kind of warfare, and there is this very much PlayStation generation sense that people who pilot these remote drones, you know, from some army base in Nevada are literally just, you know, blowing up mythical characters on some video game screen, whereas it is actually real life. So some of those issues were very interesting to me. This movie's definitely a slow burner, mm-hmm. And I think in some ways I wished it had been a little bit more high paced. But on final kind of analysis, I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I like what you said about the video game, Joe. That was what came to light straight away. Look, it's difficult to have a commentary on a war without being political and taking a position. And I think that, like you guys have said, I think he manages to walk that fine line very well, right? He doesn't take a position, but he gives you both sides of the story, which I think is very good. For me, it's a little bit about playing God. I really love this whole analogy that he had between a dusty Afghanistan and a very dusty Nevada. I don't know if you got that. Mm-hmm. And one is very wealthy and one is very poor. I kind of like that split screen in a way. Brilliant acting here. I like the slow burn. I think it's definitely more of a character-driven story as opposed to a war movie. My only gripe with this is that Ethan Hawke had this horrible grimace on his face, like he had just drunk vinegar. And other than that, I thought it was brilliant. Very good film.
Can we talk about performances? Because I think, you know, Rashmi, you describe it as a horrible grimace. I think in my mind, one of the amazing things about Ethan Hawke is his sheer versatility. And if you compare this to some of his recent work, I mean, you know, Boyhood springs to mind, and the very different nature of, you know, that you know, irresponsible kind of happy-go-lucky father character he plays in Boyhood, compared to this soldier here who has enormous weight bearing upon his shoulders and some, you know, really difficult ethical, moral weighing up that he's constantly doing. You can see it in his face in every shot. And I really actually admired him and his performance here very much.
Yeah, I think Ethan Hawke is not for everyone. I think he is such a particular screen persona. It's surprising that, you know, he's in this third or fourth year of his career and still doing well. But I think he's the go-to person for a lot of very good directors. Like Andrew Niccol keeps going back to him, certainly Linklater.
He's done
four or five films with him. So I think there's something about him which really resonates for these directors. And I agree, this is a very different role. And I think it's kind of a risky role because he's playing a man who is inherently very passive and he's kind of overwhelmed by everything which is happening around mm-hmm. him. At least that was my interpretation, until he cannot take it anymore. So I think he does that reasonably well. And then poor January Jones. I mean, is she doomed to always play the suffering wife?
Yeah.
You well, know, not just talk the about suffering, being typecast.
But almost certainly in the early part of the film, she was the suffering, grumbling wife. And
right.
I just saw her reprising that role that she had played and became famous for in Mad Men.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, wow. Is this all we're going to see from you? Because I would love to see her do something else.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, despite the big paychecks that I'm sure get waved her way for exactly this type of role, I think I would just really like to see her do something completely
like a comedy.
Different. Something fun, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
She has a Lucille Ball a Lucille Ball likeness about her in terms of her physical appearance, but, you know, we never get to see that fun side of her.
Yeah. And going back to the movie's politics, I agree that, you know, he has different characters in the movie represent different sides of the argument, be it, you know, the collateral damage that you should or shouldn't take when you're doing the terror on war, when you know some innocent people are going to die with a lot of heinous people. Do you make that call or not? I think he does have an opinion on it. And maybe he's more leaning towards one character or the other, but, you know, it would have been too easy for him to kind of make it one-sided, and I'm glad that he has other characters who are defending the other side of the argument.
Agree.
So I think that it's a more mature way of speaking to this.
And interestingly enough, based on a true story.
Yeah, I wonder about that. I mean, I made the note at the beginning that it was based on true events
rather
than the true story. So I wonder how many of the, you know, the characters are fictional versus... you know, the events we know to be true based on what's happening in the war.
Yeah, or amalgams of people.
But certainly the thing that suggests to me, Yazdi, that he has much stronger opinion is the fact that in this movie, the CIA is this anonymous bad guy, right. And they're barking out orders. So, you know, they're handled in such a way that it's very difficult to oppose them. There can be no challenging them. They're basically a presence on the phone.
Yeah, I think more than that piece, what came across to me is, you know, if you're trained as a soldier, is it satisfying enough to be in a box blowing people up thousands of miles away versus the joy and what you're trained to do being in an F-16 jet?
Well, be careful about your choice of words here. I mean, I think not
the joy, but what you're trained to be.
As a pilot, it must be very frustrating to never be able to go up in a plane because I think, you know, that...
Yeah, correct. Joy is not the right word, but the fulfillment. Right.
And the adrenaline of war. I mean, I think, you know, being disconnected in the way that they are, there is a certain adrenaline that I think comes from being in combat. Not saying that anyone really enjoys that, but, you know, that's what they're trained for. And in many ways, if you're, you know, doing things by remote control, it's not what you're trained to do. So it may be, you know, a very frustrating existence.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on then to movie number two, The Diplomat.
Somewhat connected, right?
Yeah.
I guess so, yeah. But this is very much a true story.
Documentary.
So this movie is a documentary. It's been put together by HBO Films and is directed by David Holbrooke, who is the son of Richard Holbrooke, the former Secretary of State under, I believe, the Clinton administration. In some ways, this movie is really his attempt at trying to portray his father, who he, at the beginning of the movie at least, he alludes to not knowing very well, in part because this man was so dedicated to his work that his family and certainly everything else around him was secondary to his role. In particular, it explores quite nicely the situation that occurred in the former Yugoslavia, in the 1990s, where Richard Holbrooke was a pivotal person in trying to broker some sort of peace deal between the various factions in that war. So, again, it's a documentary. It's been put together. I think it's going to be released by HBO Films, ultimately. Mm-hmm. They certainly had the HBO logo there. So what did you guys think of The Diplomat?
I really enjoyed this documentary. I mean, I'm a documentary lover anyway, and I think that... once I'd seen this film, I'm embarrassed to say that I didn't actually know much about Richard Holbrooke in life, but what a loss of a force of nature within our arsenal, I think, in terms of a political person that would be wheeled out to try and help in these really difficult situations of negotiations. Some things that jumped out to me, just the, you know, we always say this thing about great people that these great people who do great things have some flaw, and it's interesting to me that where he was so good in public, he lacked with his own family. These connections and people who felt like he was such a good friend and made people feel so special that his own family didn't feel that way. So that was something that really was interesting to me. And then this really interesting sub-story about a journalist called David Rhodes, who had been kidnapped twice, once in Yugoslavia, and then once in Afghanistan, and how that serendipitous, well, I guess it's never serendipitous to be kidnapped, but a very interesting sub-story about this kidnapping that occurs twice with the same journalist and how Richard Holbrooke saves him twice and what came of that. Yeah. So great documentary. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, like you, I didn't know much about him. I knew that when Madeleine Albright was being considered, he was the other person who was being considered for the job of Secretary of State at that time. I think the movie is, you know, ultimately its weakness is also its greatest strength, is that the movie is constructed as a love letter of a son to his father. And, you know, it was a son who did not see much of his father, and after his death is kind of retracing and trying to understand his father's position in the world. And so it is not, by definition, you know, a very objective documentary, but that's also what gives it a lot of strength, because, you know, it comes from a place of trying to understand this person's ultimately really remarkable influence on world politics, on history, on saving lives, on tendering peace, and so forth. And I think for me, there were two things which makes this person a very fascinating subject for a documentary. One is he was a remarkably undiplomatic person for being a diplomat.
Yes.
Right. I mean, he was like a force of nature, and he was kind of very willful, and he was kind of, you know, a bulldozer, and he got what he wanted, and maybe that's why he was so effective. Mm-hmm. But you always think of a diplomat as a person who doesn't step on anybody's toes, is always kind of careful not to offend anyone. Yeah, as a politician. But this was a person who was, he was very, very successful being a diplomat by being undiplomatic. So that was very fascinating. And the other thing which the movie gave me a great respect for is to understand how backbreaking and just how difficult a job it is to be a diplomat. You know, you think of a diplomat as a person who wears fancy clothes and goes to consulate parties, and, you know, when the president comes and introduces them to, you know, the other world authorities. But in time of war, you know, that person's role is unthinkable, to try and understand another culture, mm-hmm. to try and kind of be this outsider who could come off, we've talked about this yesterday, who could come off so arrogant trying to tell some other foreign country how they should behave. So it's a lot of, it gives you an appreciation, so much work that goes into that. So it's a must watch. I think it's pretty good documentary.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think they made the very wise choice at the beginning to really highlight the fact that his son was, and it was his son who directed it. So he really did make the point up front that, you know, this is about my father and this is made by me. So I think, you know, without that kind of key context setting moment, I think this movie, this documentary could have come across as a little too reverential. I think it certainly comes from a place of love, and you can see that. But at the same time, you know, he does do a very good job of trying to balance the you know, the personal foibles of this great man. What was also remarkable here was the access that they had to the various people. I mean, clearly this was a politician that was very well respected in Washington. You know, they had both Bill and Hillary Clinton agree to talk.
Mm-hmm. Al Gore.
You know, we had Al Gore, David Petraeus, Kofi Annan. You know, a whole bunch of, you know, very powerful people who agreed to go on the record and discuss somebody who, you know, clearly they all maybe had various, you know, run-ins with, but nonetheless respected who he was and what he was trying to do.
Especially Hillary Clinton, who I think says a lot of things in this documentary, which I think might jeopardize her own political run right now. Because, you know, during her interviews, she kind of mentions how, you know, Holbrook was kind of never Obama's favorite person, that the two never got along.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, she's acknowledging that she herself never got along with all of Obama's policies, you know, considering that she was his, you know, Secretary of State. So I think I too was kind of very surprised at the candor.
It's interesting you bring that up, Yazdi, because all the way through I was thinking, is this doing her harm or is this doing her good? And I came away feeling actually at the end that she actually did herself a lot of good. And she seems rather calculated to me. She's not a silly woman. Mm. I think she's hedged her bets in the right direction. I think anyone watching this documentary who is in favor of Hillary will not be deterred by what she says.
But you have to wonder when it was actually filmed. I mean, you know, she's only recently announced her run for the presidency.
Well.
And, you know, while you have to, you know, understand and probably accept that she's been thinking about this for a long time, I wonder, you know, this obviously came at a time when she was no longer Secretary of State, mm-hmm. but that means it's been done sometime in the past 4 years when she hadn't really, you know, made the formal decision, the external decision to run for candidacy.
And I would think that she's worked so closely with Holbrooke through the years that she couldn't in good conscience refuse to be part of a documentary made by her son, by his son, to kind of almost, you know, give his father due respect. I mean, I think it would be impossible for her to walk away from that.
I agree.
Yeah.
Great documentary, actually. Yes. Very good. Okay, so the next one we saw was Backtrack. So, Yazdi, do you want to do the intro to that one?
Sure. So, Backtrack is directed by Australian Hammer Michael Petroni. This is not his first film. I believe this is his third film. And Backtrack is financed from Australia, and it has a lot of Australian cast members, including Sam Neill. But the lead is played by Adrian Brody, who plays a troubled psychiatrist who starts having strange visions soon after the death of his daughter. And even as he and his wife are both trying to deal with it at the personal level, things start to go pretty strange when it comes to his patients. And very soon, a set of clues led by his nightmares and his patients lead him back to his hometown, where he realizes that he'll have to dig deep into the past to try and fix all the things which don't quite seem right. So this is kind of a supernatural thriller.
Otherwise known as horror to Yazdi.
Otherwise known as horror. I must say I was caught a little bit off guard. I didn't expect the movie to be, you know, full out in the horror genre as it is. But be that as it may, what do you guys think about it?
Yeah, like you, Yazdi. I mean, I don't think I was expecting for this to be as genuinely creepy at points as it mm-hmm. actually was. And I think, it's hard to kind of challenge a directorial set of choices, but I think this movie would have been a little more frightening had it stayed away from some of the horror tropes of mm-hmm. the screaming schoolgirl that whose hair turns black and has these sharp teeth heading towards the screen, because I think it was a very well constructed psycho thriller, and I think ultimately the way that the story played out, it had some genuine surprises. We didn't have a sense for what was happening other than, there were some sixth sense type moments where, what you appear to be, is that too much of a spoiler?
No.
Where what you think is going to be, what you think is transpiring isn't quite transpiring. And then the movie kind of evolves and develops and keeps throwing twists at you to the point that, by the end of it, I was genuinely satisfied that I didn't see things coming and that the movie kind of played out very well. So other than being a little too ready to do the cheap jump moments, I think, had it toned those down a bit, I think it would have been even higher in my esteem than it actually is.
Yeah, I would say not bad. It wasn't predictable necessarily, but I just thought it was all so silly. I didn't like the cheap shots, too many of them.
Boo.
I feel like it was really slow in the middle. I feel like if it had been 20 minutes shorter and got rid of, like you said, Joe, the cheap shots, this could have been a really good film and probably like a sixth sense of its time. That said, I think Adrian Bodie did a really good job acting in this. I loved his Australian accent, very authentic. My one complaint is the movie is really, really dark. And I don't mean, it goes to dark places, but the overall lighting was so dark in this movie. Mm-hmm. I was craving light.
And it wasn't a projection issue either.
I think it was intentional. It's meant to create a tone of foreboding. And, in fact, one of my complaints is that there are many, many times in the movie as part of the script where he finds something out and he needs to go investigate something. And it's always conveniently in the middle of the night. So, he has to go into the grave. This is classic horror movie tropes.
Yeah.
Why would somebody go and go through a graveyard in the middle of the night? Wait till the morning, take your friends with you,
Yeah.
But,
bring a flashlight.
Yeah, bring a flashlight, But it's the same stuff, the door banging in the wind, the shrieking music, the person on the swing who suddenly appears as a vision as the swing is going up and down. So I wish they had kind of stayed away from your typical PG-13 horror movie cliches. But I don't think it has the emotional strength or the emotional weight of something like The Sixth Sense. But I think it's a reasonably well-done script. It does work. I didn't see the ending coming.
And it was very poetic. I mean, I think for me, yes, at least, the way that the film ended was very satisfying to me in many ways, in terms of how ultimately things resolved. I mean, again, I'm being very careful about spoilers here, but it was to me, it was kind of nicely wrapped up in a bow.
Which I was going
to
say Karma's a bitch or a schoolgirl.
Ooh.
Ooh, I like that.
Karma is a schoolgirl. There's a quote.
And what self-respecting screenwriter would have, there's actually a piece of dialogue in there where he almost says, "I see dead people." I mean,
correct.
I'm like, come on, you cannot consciously have that in a movie and not have people think about The Sixth Sense.
Absolutely, yeah.
That as a thing, yeah.
As we did.
Next one, Applesauce. Okay, so Applesauce is Honor Tuchel plays a husband who innocently reveals on talk radio the worst thing he's ever done, setting off a chain of hilariously uncontrollable events that draw in his wife and another couple. And this guy is actually quite dear to my heart because a couple of months ago, I actually got to view... Bless you, Yazdi.
Thank you.
I actually got to view a screener which was called Summer of Blood. And it was this really silly zombie movie, which I really, really enjoyed. And I've written a write-up, a review of it on our website on moviewallahs.com. So go to the blog and read that. But this is basically this guy's second movie. So Yazdi, why don't you go first with this one?
It has a very homegrown feel about it, the whole movie. It feels like it was made with $100, maybe $10. But there's something charming about it. It kind of harkens back almost. It makes me feel like the early days of indie filmmaking when people started doing this. It almost has an early 80s feel to it. Maybe partly because the character sounds so much like Woody Allen. He's very neurotic. He's always complaining about, you know, my life is this, nobody does this, you know. All the characters are neurotic. It's set in New York, so it has a very Woody Allen-ish feel. Although it is a little bit more earthier and more silly and a little bit more interested in the baser things than Woody Allen's movies are. I enjoyed it from start to finish. There's not the hint of polish in any frame of the movie, but I think therein lies some of its charms at how rough it is around the edges.
Yeah, I thought the style here was very improvisational. I mean, I think the characters were, and I'm completely speculating here, but my sense was that they were kind of given some instruction on what a scene was supposed to deliver and then just told to kind of have at it with an improvisational dialogue, because it felt, some of the dialogue just felt a little clunky and didn't feel very, very well written or crafted. But, you know, that said, this is deeply, deeply, darkly comical. And, you know, there's some really true moments of bizarre hilarity in this movie, you know, not least of which involve, you know, the procurement of body parts that pop up throughout the movie at certain points in time. I think it's a little bit of a stretch for me in terms of believability, and I think that was almost my biggest complaint. Not that movies need to be entirely believable, but this was entirely implausible. And, you know, it's fine that, you know, they were going for, kind of that comedic type take on life and some observational stuff. But I would have enjoyed it, I think, just a little more if it had been a little less bizarre.
I love this movie. I mean, I love this guy. I mean, if you've seen Summer of Blood, this is total silliness, but it really works because I think it's got some cleverness and some smartness to it underneath all of that layer of craziness. And I do like his voice. I think that when I think
when you say his voice, you mean
his writing?
I like his writing. I like that, and I love Woody Allen, right? So clearly I'm gonna like something like this. For me, when I think of indie movie, this is what indie movie is really about. It's not polished. It is improvisational.
Kind of guerrilla filmmaking.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I like that he's been able to pull these people together and it works. The other person I was really happy to see was Max Casella. And Max Casella, for those people who watch Doogie Howser, was Doogie Howser's best friend. And he was kind of like the smart talking, sidekick. And I really like him. And I think he's brilliant in this movie. A lot of the comedy comes from that interaction between the two men in this movie. I really enjoyed this. It's very amateurish, but it's got some sincerity and it's kind of endearing. And it's a good, you know, after watching the gloss of the Duplass brothers and their, you know, we talked about this in yesterday's podcast where they're kind of obsessed with relationships and marriage. I feel like this was another take on relationships and marriage and a little bit different from the Duplasses.
Yeah, but I don't think he's even ever close to being realistic. I think this whole thing is meant to be seen as a farce.
Correct, but yeah. I like that. I like that it's disposable.
As evidenced by the score. I mean, the score in this music was so over the bizarrely top, right? Dramatic at points. I was like, somebody's played the wrong tape. I mean, I was I was like, where on earth is that coming from? But yeah, you're right. I think farce is probably a good word because, you know, some of the comedic elements here are just like, what?
I mean, I can see this as being a play. It's written like a play. It almost plays out, you know, like a play. But yeah,
I did think that the performances all around were very good, though. You know, these people did really nice jobs portraying these, you know, bizarre, slightly quirky characters, and it was, you know,
fun. Overall, it's a fun. You know what? It's a fun movie. for a rainy Sunday afternoon on Netflix. I can't imagine this is going to get any sort of general release, but I think it will go straight to Netflix. And I think if you've got nothing else to do and it's a rainy Sunday afternoon and you really just want to giggle and escape, this is the movie to watch, Applesauce.
Yeah,
this filmmaker's got some legs, I think. Yeah. I think there's definitely, he's building towards something that's going to be great.
And because Summer of Blood, you can see it. Summer of Blood, which he released last year. If you have a spare moment, check it out. It's kind of funny. It's an alternative zombie movie that will really make you laugh. A zombie vampire movie.
Okay.
Our next movie that we saw.
The final one, is it?
Yes.
No, we have Hungry Hearts as well.
Oh, okay.
So our next movie is Tenured.
So Tenured is directed by Chris Modono, who, according to the Tribeca Film Festival write-up, might be the tallest director working right now. He's 6'5".
Wow.
Which is pretty tall. But anyway, Chris Modono as well as...
Moduno,
as well as his lead actor, have co-written the script. It's a small town, small film based on a school teacher whose wife has just left him, and he's down in the dumps, and he has completely given up on all of his school teacher activities, which leads to some very interesting experiences had by his classroom of school kids. And then his vice principal at school, the assistant principal at school, recognizing that he has completely checked out, kind of devises this plan to get him fired, which is difficult to do because he's tenured. And that sets the plot for the rest of the movie. And at one point because he can't be fired, he gets saddled with the worst job in the school, which is directing the little kids' school play. And in the meanwhile, there is a female love interest in the wings by way of another teacher at school. So this is one of those, again, small independent movies made by these two guys who, you know, started together in improv. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, this movie is based on a short film which played as a short at the Tribeca Film Festival a couple of years ago. So Rashmi, what do you think about Tenured?
Okay, so Chris Moduno and Gil Zabarsky, listen for these names because I think these are going to be the next great directors of our time to come. Maybe not this year, but I think in a few years' time, we'll be watching movies of theirs or ideas of theirs that I think will really grow legs. I really enjoyed this movie. This, again, is kind of bizarro, alternative rom-com, not really even rom-com. But I like the idea that we take a young teacher who's tenured, not even an older teacher, which is not what we normally think of in terms of the education system. I like that it's a 30-something teacher who's just hopeless and a complete loser. But again, there's something very endearing and there's a lot of heart. And the kids in this movie are amazing. Now, we talked a little bit about this last night, the idea of younger kids, like maybe 8 to 10-year-olds. Foul language, you know, unexpected dialogue. But it worked in this movie for me. It just really worked. It made me laugh. And I kind of felt for the main protagonist. And you know what? It's something a little bit different. I really enjoyed it.
Joe?
I hope their PR and their publicist are certainly listening to Rashmi, because that's a great quote for them, right? The next great directors.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, clearly for me, there's some talent on show here.
Yeah.
You know, they have done a very good job in turning what was essentially a short film here into a feature length. But I could never kind of escape that feeling. And I think... The feeling that I had all the way through this movie was, I love the premise. I love some of the ideas in here, but this movie is too long for the kind of content and some of the directions that it took. So ultimately, for me, it felt a little, too long. Perhaps not quite as sharp as perhaps the short film itself was. Mm. But clearly, I agree with you in that there is some very good talent on show here. The movie's very well put together, I think. All of the performances have some great comedic timings. I liked all of the actors that were in the movie. And even though at times I think they had some clunky lines to deliver, they did really nice job of kind of, you know, hitting the punchlines, and you know, whether that's judicious writing, editing, directing, or acting, I can't really tell, but it works for the most part. You did mention the key hot button for me, which is, you know, preteens using the F-bomb. I don't like that. I've never liked that. I think it's cheap. I think I use the F-bomb as a preteen, so I don't know why I'm quite so sensitive to it. But
yeah.
I just have this horrible sense of them using this explicit language on set, and I think there's kind of a lack of innocence that I don't like to see on screen for some reason. But that, other than that, I mean, this movie was... a very pleasant way to spend 90 minutes. Not my favorite of the film festival.
So I don't know. Again, it's, you know, I don't know. Some movies just come off as shallow and amateurish and, you know, very cheaply put together. But then some of the movies, those things are there, but you don't mind it.
Right.
And I think that was the case for me. I mean, you know in the first 5 minutes exactly how this movie is going to play out. So you know what the destination is. You kind of know the road it's headed on as well. But somehow it's on how you do it. And the movie has heart. And, you know, again, there was no 1 minute of it which was unpredictable. I knew, we all know exactly right. What's going to happen. And there is something square about it. Even though it gets into some risque stuff,
correct.
There's something old-fashioned and very square about it. And there is an authenticity to it as well, which is a very weird thing to say about a story which is so middle of the road. But there is an authenticity to it. I mean, there was one part where, you know, he's trying to
hang himself. Yeah.
And his
co-worker.
His co-worker comes up and says, you know, it's just pain. It's just pain. You'll get past it. And I don't know why, but that really resonated for me. I'm trying to kill myself or anything, but I think this has come from somebody, you know, somebody's put their own life's experiences in it.
There's something very real about it. I'll give you that.
Yeah. And it's genuinely funny. I mean, there are some pieces of dialogue where I was just laughing out loud. So I know that there's nothing new about this movie. Doesn't break any new ground, not even close to it, but it has so much heart. I this is the kind of movie I wanted to embrace.
Yeah,
I want to give the movie a hug. Yeah, this is my virtual hug to you, Tenure. Good job.
Okay, so a great directorial debut there. I mean, it's no Short Term 12, but I think...
it's no Short Term 12.
Which was another short film converted to a feature length, but certainly they weren't going for that. I think good job, guys. And the crowd loved it. I mean, one of the things that amazed me was...
Oh, it had lots of
just
love.
How well the audience responded to this movie.
Yes.
You know, everyone around me was having an absolute blast.
Same.
You know, to the point where I was thinking, well, you know, I'm not quite laughing as much. I'm not on the same wavelength, but...
I mean, I think the assistant
the audience
principal...
really loved it. And there was a lot of love at the Q&A session after the movie. I think that was also... That also came across. I think everyone was.
There are some really laugh out loud performances. The assistant vice principal,
Yazdi,
what we were going to say.
Right, you know, from
Kate
The Office.
Yeah,
she's been on The Office. And then her sidekick was so funny.
He was hilarious.
He just had...
Willie
had just the right inflections. I mean, he was just watching him made me giggle.
Me too.
He was so inappropriately right for that role. But anyway...
The more we talk about this movie, the more I like it even more, right?
Yeah, it's so harmless.
And harmful at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to our final movie of the day, which is one that, Yazdi, only you saw. And that movie is Hungry Hearts. So the basic premise for this one is, after a chance encounter in the bathroom of a Chinese restaurant, Mina and Jude fall in love. Soon Mina is pregnant and the couple is celebrating their relationship with friends and family. Having never been part of a family, Mina finds a new dynamic both exhilarating and intimidating. In search of some guidance, she visits a psychic whose counsel begins to inform Mina's future actions in unpredictable ways.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
This movie is directed by Saverio Costanzo, and has among other people in the cast Adam Driver, who Yazdi, you very much described as suddenly everywhere a few podcasts ago, and this is certainly the case. He is certainly one of the hardest working young talents and new voices in the acting world. We know him best, I think, for his role as Adam in Girls, but it also stars Alba Rohrwacher, I butchered that name, Roberta Maxwell, Al Rofi, Gaisha Otero. So Yazdi, what did we miss? Because, yeah, we were otherwise engaged while Hungry Hearts was screening.
Yeah, Hungry Hearts got a lot of press out of Sundance as well. I think that was where it premiered. I don't want to say too much about this movie because this is such an unusual movie. I can honestly say I have not watched a movie like this. I've certainly never watched a movie.
Ever?
Yeah, forever I've never watched a movie which deals with this particular theme. I don't think I have. I think the closest anything gets to, and only in a very general conceptual tone, is maybe Rosemary's Baby. But this movie is almost neo-realistic, meaning it almost becomes, it kind of misleads you. The first, and again, I'm reluctant to say too much, but the first half an hour, maybe 45 of the minutes of the movie, make you think it's one kind of movie, and then it just settles in and becomes something entirely different.
So it's a psychological thriller or horror or...
What genre is this?
Yeah, how would you describe
if you had it? If you were forced to put it into a pigeonhole, which one would it belong to?
I would...
And this is with a gun to your head.
I would think of it as a domestic horror.
Ooh.
Oh my God.
You know, it really is. I mean, I can see this happening in many people's lives, but I can see that when it's happening, it is all out horror. So, you know, it's kind of horror in the way. I think the other movie it reminded me of in its purity and in terms of the discomfort it created in you is the movie we saw a couple of years ago with Tilda Swinton called We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Let's talk about Kevin.
So it gets to that level of, you know, how difficult a watching experience that was.
Yes.
And it gets into really, really very dark space very quickly. Like it makes you question what would you do in this situation. And I think it's the kind of movie which... It does this trick where it makes you think that it's politics, not it's politics, but you have to take a side. Okay,
it's position,
and it leads you to thinking that obviously, well, this is the position to be in, and then in the last half hour of the movie, it almost seems to be taking the other position, and I think this is a director who almost says, here is the situation, this is the moral dilemma, and which side. Which side do you sit on? And it's very easy for you to take one side, but then, you know, haven't you met some friends I have a lot of friends who are really new agey. They don't want to have anything to do with anything chemical, and they think that the whole world is out to poison you.
Yeah.
And they want to protect themselves from it.
The people who refuse to vaccinate their children.
The people who refuse to... I think the people who are really invested, for example, in the vaccination, they need to see this movie. Because it says, are we the crazy people who think that drugs are necessary and who believe in whatever science brings to you to protect your health? Or are those the people who have it right, that maybe the only way man will get out of our current dilemma is to go completely away from any kind of medical intervention? And it raises all these kinds of weird questions, and I've never seen a movie deal with that kind of thing. So it's quite remarkable. I'm amazed that somebody made it. It's not an easy movie to watch. It's not a pleasant movie, but it's played very realistically, so it's almost like a horror. Go on.
So the one question I had, Yazdi, is, you know, we've talked a lot about Adam Driver, and like you said, he seems to be everywhere. So one of the complaints I guess we've all had is Adam Driver is always Adam Driver. He's the same character. In this, is he something different? Do we see another side of Adam Driver?
Yeah, it's not the usual hipster Brooklyn, Adam Driver, although this movie is set very much in New York. But he's just... he's a guy who's trying to make best of a situation.
Okay.
And it would be so easy for him to just say, and I'm not going to say
this. Are you talking about the character here, or are you talking about the actor?
The character. And okay. So he's just playing it as a man who's trying to, he sees something clearly wrong from within the perspective of where he lives. And he's kind of meant to represent the audience member.
Okay.
But at the same time, he's trying to do good. So no, it's not the usual Adam Driver. It's a unique choice. I would not have picked him. But be that as it may, I think he does a good job. And it's pretty much a three-person movie. It's almost everything happens with
it
three
people. It
sounds
terrific. I mean, yeah. It sounds very fascinating. I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it.
Do you think this will get a general release? I mean, is it accessible enough for
I think it'll play in the landmarks. Yeah, I think it'll play in the landmark cinemas. I don't know how long it'll play, but it'll play in the alternative cinema houses if word gets around.
Okay.
And I think this might be the edgiest, most removed from the mainstream film that I've seen so far at Tribeca.
Great. Well, we're at 45 minutes into the podcast, so we'll break here. This was our day 3 wrap-up at Tribeca. We will be doing at least one more podcast live from New York. So if you're still listening, thank you. mail at moviewallers.com, as always. Let us know if you have comments. If you've been following our Facebook page at facebook.com/moviewallers, you'll have seen a few pictures posted directly from some of the audience Q&As here at Tribeca. And we'll make sure we get all of that stuff up on the main site as well as soon as the festival is done. So until part 4 of our Tribeca wrap-up, it's too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.